this is Sam Hutchinson, partner at Cadwallader, and welcome to this edition of Fund Finance Friday Industry Conversations. So I think all of our listeners will agree that we've probably seen more developments and innovations in our industry over the past few years than ever before. And today I'm talking to two guys who've created what I think could possibly be the biggest development the market has seen. Nenno, Slade, could we start with you both just giving us a few words around your backgrounds in this industry and your current roles at No Limit Capital?
Absolutely. And thanks for a very kind introduction, Sam. So my name is Nenno Reich. I am a co-founder of No Limit Capital. No Limit Capital is first independent fund finance lender that's focusing exclusively on a capital call financing to private capital funds. Prior to forming No Limit Capital, I was heading up Investec's fund finance sales and fundraising team, where I was responsible for distribution of fund finance loans, as well as raising institutional capital to invest alongside the bank. Slade, I hand it over to you.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Nenno. Slade Spaulding, co-founder of No Limit Capital. Prior to forming NLC, I was the co-head of Capital Call Financing and head of GP Financing and Investec Fund Solutions team. I was responsible for covering GP relationships and providing financing solutions throughout the fund lifecycle.
Thank you very much, both. So I think your moves were very hotly anticipated. And I think once we and the rest of the market learned what you guys were doing, it made complete sense, but it'd be really, really interesting to you to talk us through your journey and your strategy.
Absolutely. So Slade and I have over 20 years of combined fund finance experience, and together we've done more than $4.5 billion of capital call lines across 45 transactions or so. And a big part of that was with non-bank institutional capital. Our journey with institutional investors started about 5 years ago, where very few people outside of active fund finance market knew what capital call financing was. So we spent a lot of time pioneering that market and educating both investors as well as rating agency about what capital call financing is, and presenting it as a very interesting investment opportunity for non-bank institutional capital. So we were lucky to get a few of them interested. And over time, we were able to scale that business and raise just over 3.5 billion euros of institutional capacity. So while we had success doing that within the bank in terms of raising and deploying capital, we felt that being an independent platform would bring significant benefits to investors as well as the rest of the market. So earlier this year, we left Investec and started No Limit Capital. And being independent allowed us a couple of things, amongst which now we're 100% aligned with institutional capital. So any conflicts that come as being incumbent in the bank are completely removed. We can do larger scale transactions as we are no longer bound by the banking constraint. And being non-bank lender in this space, we see ourselves as a very strong partner to existing fund financing lenders, as we don't present really any competitive pressure. We're here just to deploy the capital we have from our investors, and we are not really looking for any ancillary business outside of capital call financing.
Thanks, Nenno. And in terms of the types of products that you're interested in, your investors are interested in, is it capital call facilities? Is it hybrids? Is it NAVs? Or are you just focused on one particular part of the market?
We've got a very clear strategy to the markets. As Nenno mentioned, we exclusively focused on providing capital call financing solutions. And what that effectively means is we focus on managers with a presence in the UK and in Europe. Now, we expect to expand that to the US by the end of next year. But right now, our capital is earmarked for UK and European jurisdictions. We're targeting fund sizes ranging between 750 million and multi-billions. Our lending capacity starts at 100 million, but we are able to look at smaller transactions for the right manager. And we can provide financing solutions up to 600 million. We can do bilateral transactions, but we do believe the majority of our transactions will be done in partnership with banks.
What is it, do you think, that is so appealing about these types of facilities to institutional investors? Certainly, you know, one of the big developments that we've seen over the last couple of years is that appetite, as you both have been describing. And I guess we've seen that appetite across the whole fund finance product spectrum, but particularly with the high return products like the NAV facilities. But you guys are just focusing on the capital call facilities. What do you think is the appeal of those types of facilities for the investors that are backing you?
Thanks, Sam. Capital call financing, while not being as recognized with institutional investors, has started to change over the course of the last 2 years. And really what makes this investment strategy attractive is relative value that it brings compared to other short-term investment grade products that are currently available in the market. I think everybody knows, and this theme has been discussed many times, with low interest rates and very limited yields that are currently being offered in the public markets, more and more investors are looking at private markets. And we saw that with particularly private equity, but also private debt and the record high fundraising activity that's being going on there. But more and more investors recognize the high capital and cash balances that they have on their books. And they're looking at ways to invest that so it doesn't necessarily earn negative interest rates in euros and virtually no interest rates elsewhere. And capital call financing provides a very good alternative to that.
And I guess in terms of allocation categorization of these facilities for those investors, how important is being able to apply a methodology to these facilities? Is that integral to your investors being able to participate in these types of transactions and treat them as investment grade and therefore sort of get that into that allocation? Or are they generally flexible?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very important part of the underwriting process. And I think having very clearly defined rating methodology and deal rating methodologies is important for any strategy, particularly the one that's viewed as an investment grade and in a lot of ways cash alternative. So we spent a lot of time working alongside our investors to help them to develop methodology. And we have our own rating methodology, which we use, which is based on both quantitative and qualitative analysis, where we would start with the LP base and we would rate each and underwrite and rate each individual LP from AAA to CCC. But at the same time, we do recognize that fund finance in particular is a people-led sector. And as such, a tremendous amount of diligence is done on the managers themselves. So the GP's franchise value, but also the actual people behind the manager and the track record that they have. So that's kind of the approach that we have in terms of answering the question with regards to their ability to invest and having methodology. Absolutely, that is the key. And different investors approach it differently. Some develop it in-house. Others rely on a third-party rating agency, where we saw a lot of development, particularly in the last kind of 12 to 18 months. And others will rely on ours. So there are three different approaches to the market, but understanding it and having the methodologies in place is absolutely key.
We've talked about your model being able to provide scale, I think perhaps a way we've never seen before. In terms of other differentiating factors for you guys, you know, does the way that you're doing this now bring anything more to the table in terms of the types of investments you can make? How else are you sort of differentiating from other lenders in the market?
Sam, I think we see three key differentiators in the market. The first one we've spoken about, and that's creating large scale lending capacity. As I mentioned, we can provide solutions from 100 up to 600 million per transaction. And we expect that to go over $1 billion in the course of next year with the strong pipeline we have in our fundraising. The second is our cost-effective lending structures. Our structures incorporate both traditional RCF facilities and NLC's on-request facility. And effectively what that provides the GP is an element of certainty of funding, but also reducing the overall financing costs to the borrowers. We expect that GPs can save up to $3 million for every $1 billion raised. So what does this mean? Effectively, a $2 billion fund will save $6 million, $3 billion fund will save $9 million, and so on and so on. And then the third piece to this is our technology-led processes. So we've created a portal for borrowers to access their facility seamlessly, and it allows them to also get live updates on their borrowing status at any time.
That's super interesting, Slade. Hopefully doesn't get rid of the need for lawyers, but otherwise it sounds really, really interesting. Why now, I guess, guys? I mean, I think the answer is, well, part of the answer is at least pretty obvious, in that there is a massive, I think, imbalance between demand and supply. But it'd be really interesting to hear from you guys, because you've been in the market for so long, how things have developed and led you to, I suppose, this point, and what sort of shifts you've seen in the market, in particular, I suppose, post-COVID as well. Obviously, you guys have done this post-COVID. Was that any sort of accelerator to your thinking or not?
Yeah, so it's very interesting looking at the development of the market, and especially being part of that market for quite some time. I think what we've seen in general of fund financing, it used to be very niche type of offering done on a very relationship basis by few banks in the market to large cap asset managers. And you got to being pretty much a very global market with over 750 billion of these type of financing in the market, and more than 80 active lenders in this space. So there's been a lot of changes. And I think majority of that changes we saw is in last kind of 5 years, which was followed by the record high fundraising activity in the private capital space. In terms of COVID, the impact of COVID and investors' views on that, I mean, one of the key challenges that we would always be presented with when speaking to investors is they would say, well, this product has gone through the cycle, but during the last GFC, fund financing market wasn't nearly as big as it is today. And there hasn't been a true test of what would happen in a big shock environment. And COVID actually did just that. So what we have seen during COVID was very interesting. We saw GPs mostly calling down on their LPs and repaying capital call lines instead of drawing more, which was market expectations. Again, even in that time, we didn't see any major default. And from all the people that we spoke to in the market, they seem to have a similar experience. There has been some publication with regards to LP defaults, but when we were looking into that, it didn't seem to have significant amount of substance, and the majority of those would be referring to individual instances, not necessarily a market-wide type of default. So that was very interesting to see. And at the same time, fundraising paused for a bit, but that's all it happened. It was very kind of Q2 and Q3 of 2020, there was a slowdown, but it came back with vengeance. And on the lending side, we saw a few banks kind of stopping lending to new borrowers, but still supporting the existing relationships, and the pricing increasing slightly. So this was very interesting for our institutional investors as they were looking at the market and seeing how the market performs, and performed better than anyone expected. So while it was a terrible thing that happened to the world, in a lot of ways, it helped fund finance, and it helped institutionalize it as it provided a true test scenario. And looking at where we are today and where the market is going, and touching on the second part of your question with the supply-demand imbalance and everything that's going on there, I mean, fundraising is only going in one direction. You have multiple asset managers coming out to the market and saying that they're looking to double their AUM, and these aren't necessarily the smaller guys. These are probably the market leaders in this space. And we would expect fund financing to follow that lead. We're also seeing GPs having ability to borrow more. So when we started being active in this space, it was probably 20% of the fund size. We're now getting to the levels of 30, even in some cases, 40% of the fund size. So when you combine the fundraising, the increase in borrowing capabilities, and virtually all GPs using capital call lines, you can really see the growth that's going to happen in this space. And that's making us very excited. And that's really where we're looking to provide value to this market by giving them access to institutional capital and effectively growing alongside the current market participants.
Just to add to that, and we have seen a shift in sort of GPs using these capital call facilities. Is they're using them as an effective tool to drive value into their portfolios. And what do I mean by that? I mean, they're using it to act quick in bidding rounds, which is leading to sort of higher borrowing capacity under their LPAs, as Nenna mentioned, and what they can borrow under their cap call lines. And this is really giving them that firepower to bid quickly, but also potentially bid for co-investor or on behalf of co-investors coming into the transaction, so that can speak for the full transaction, which really gives them an upper hand when going through those sort of bidding cycles.
Completely agree with all of that, and that's absolutely reflective of what we've seen. Clearly there's a demand there, but would be interested to hear how your concept has been received by GPs and also, if you're able to, the lending community, because I guess it's still pretty novel concept, you know, the idea of servicing this demand through institutional capital. And I think what we've seen to date with sublines perhaps mostly is sort of a participation in as part of a broader syndicate, as opposed to, you know, a very material chunk of the capital being provided by institutional investors. What's been the reaction from GPs? And as I say, also, if you can speak to the lending community, that would be really interesting as well.
Sam, GPs are receiving this extremely well and are very excited. The structure gives them certainty of funding at a cheaper cost. They haven't realized that the structure is necessarily available and how to effectively utilize it. Our technology-led processes are also creating a lot of interest. GPs often find it quite cumbersome to access these transactions on an ongoing basis, and we're looking to completely streamline that, which they're very excited to see the outcome of, but also see the benefits as they utilize their facilities through their investment period.
And in terms of the sort of the bank's reactions that you've had to date, what's been the response there?
It's been very positive. And I think once the market understood what we are looking to do, and that's bringing additional capital, not necessarily competing with them, it received it very well. Speaking to the banks, they definitely see the value that we bring to the table. I mean, we often define this type of structure as a win-win-win, because for the banks, it creates a better product. It's more efficient use of their capital. So even today, when you look at what the capacity of the banking market is, the largest banks will be tapping out at 300 million, which really narrows their universe if they want to do the bilateral type of lending to only $1 billion fund. So anything above that requires large clubs. What we are looking to do here is kind of bring that additional capacity through the institutional capital. And that comes in a slightly different format, but commercially behaves very similar to what already exists. So that's why Slade mentioned GPs understand it very quickly and see a lot of value in it, because they have the certainty of the funding, they have the banking provider there that can help them with FX and all the other things that they need. And then at the same time, they have the institutional tranche. And in our previous experience, it often did happen that our investors eventually become LP in the subsequent funds of the funds that we would support. And that makes a lot of sense from just when you think about it. I mean, these investors are large institutions and they have both equity and debt strategies. And a lot of them are increasingly looking to invest in private equity. And this type of product gives them very good insight into the GP and how they do business and what they do and how they're performing. And therefore, they often do become an LP later on, which has tremendous value for the GP. So with the structure that we're suggesting, we really don't see anyone losing out of it. And as such, the market reaction so far has been very, very positive, which to be honest, is very rewarding for us. And we're glad to see. We're really here to provide that additional capacity and provide value to the entire market.
That's great to hear. Two final questions, if I may. The first one is, we're obviously most of the way through 2021 now. You guys have really just launched. How do you see the rest of 2021 panning out for you guys? What does pipeline look like for you over the next couple of months and beyond, really, into 2022, what you see happening there? And then I guess second question is more generally, what do you think for you and the market will be the continued themes or new themes, I suppose, taking us through 2022?
Yeah, absolutely. So the pipeline is looking good. It's looking great, to be honest. And I think this it's really product of the market reaction, and we were speaking with a lot of GPs directly, but at the same time, a few banks have introduced us to a couple of transactions, and we were seeing if those work for us. So from that perspective, we are very lucky to be in the position that we are. I think if we reflect on 2021, it's just been absolutely fantastic year. And I think with everything that we're seeing in fund finance market happening in terms of innovation from GP-led transactions, hybrid, NAV, PREF, and the GP financing, I mean, there is tremendous amount of opportunities out there, and that's what's really exciting. But for us, we really see capital call financing market, which is the bulk of the fund financing market and the big part of it, where the most opportunities lie. And I think for a very long period of time, there was not necessarily a lot of innovation there. But I think with the introduction of institutional capital, that will change. And there were very recently some developments that happened in this space with regards to the ratings or a couple of capital call lines. And that's all very much based on the discussions that that we were having with and helping those rating agencies to develop rating capabilities for fund finance market. And we see now banks tapping into those and using it to help their own capital treatment. So we really see this introduction of institutional capital as a great thing for the market that in the long run will help everyone involved, particularly with Basel IV just being around the corner and the impact that that will have on capital for a lot of banks. And by having this type of different providers, different lenders and rating agency ability to rate these facilities, I think it's going to help everyone in the long run.
Yeah, and I think just touching on the 2022, Sam, and following on from what Nina was saying, I think there's three key themes over the next sort of year. The first one of that is the continued sort of increased record fundraising. You know, speaking to market participants at the moment and just getting a sense of where their capacity is. Q4 this year and Q1 already sort of fully blocked up on fundraising. And it goes to sort of show alongside that Preqin LP survey, which alluded to the fact that most LPs are going to be increasing their allocation to private capital. So I think we're going to continue to see another record year, which obviously will then lead into the demand for capital call financing continuing to increase and drive. I mean, Nana said we're about 750 at the moment across the market, and we can expect that to only increase with time. The second, we expect to see more standardization in ESG. I think it's going to continue to play a massively important part in the private capital market as managers look at themselves, look at their funds, and look at their portfolio companies. And I think we're going to see the standardization coming across the metrics and reporting between LPs and GPs, which we're already starting to see across some of the larger managers. And we expect that to flow through into the ESG-linked facilities, which will create standardization. The third sort of trend we will continue to see in the market is increasing pressure on ancillary income within the banking market. Increased regulation is going to continue to put pressure on banks and the capital that they have to deploy and the cost of that capital. And on the back of that, we'll continue to see that ancillary income piece that banks will be trying to extract out of their larger relationships going to continue to be a larger and larger theme through 2022.
Thanks, Slade. We've run out of time, unfortunately, but I would just say that I've said on when I've done these podcasts in the past a number of times already just this year, that just when you think that there isn't any innovation left in the market, something else comes along. I think you guys have done it in a very, very big way. And I'm really excited to see, where your journey takes you. I think this is a massive development for our market. So thank you so much for agreeing to join today. Really appreciate it.
The material and information contained in the podcast is for general informational purposes only. Any use of the audio within this podcast without the express consent of Cadwallader is prohibited. Quotes from this podcast may not be used without the express permission of the speaker.